This is Sean with Voices of SCE. I'm speaking with Brendan Kennedy. Brendan, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
I'm pretty good. You're in Kennebunkport or Kennebunkport? Which, how are we going to call it up there in Maine?
Well, if you're a local, it's Kennebunkport. But some people, you know, will say Kennebunkport or Kennebunkport. So however you want to say it, but locals say Kennebunkport.
Now, there's some Kennedys up in that area sometimes. Is that true?
Not Kennedy's, Bushes.
Oh, the Bushes.
Yeah, the Walker compound is right on the ocean. And the Bushes have owned that for years and years. And when the elders passed away last year, just the children have taken it over now. They were there all the time before and built houses on the compound. But now George W. is in the main house.
Wow. All right, so we were going to do some theme music for you, but who was the gentleman that, Jim Couts, did he take the song you were kind of envisioning being your song?
Yeah. Whenever, you know, Bare Naked Ladies, Send Me On My Way came on at the fraternity house, Corey Miller and I used to be summoned up to the stage, or actually in the kitchen, and we would get up on the counter and just dance to it. But Jim Couts definitely took that song, so is what it is.
Well, we got a million-dollar idea for you.
If I had a $1 million,
if I had $1 million,
well, I'd buy you a house.
So anyway, nobody's buying anybody houses, but you got the $1 million track.
Absolutely.
So let's back it up. What year were you born and in what city?
I was born in Ridgefield, Connecticut in 1975.
Same year. And what was your birthday?
August 19th.
August 19th. I got you by 2 months on the planet. So when you grew up, high school, what type of sports and community activities or involvement did you do?
I was an athlete since the time I was technically really born. I'm the youngest of 8 kids, and so I had older brothers and sisters playing sports and just had passed it on down to me. So I started off with soccer, because my mother would not let us play football until we were in high school. And then I kind of stopped playing that. I started playing baseball when I was, 2 years old, but played it, started at 5 at T-ball, and then played baseball and football in high school.
Okay. And Connecticut's a long way from Muncie, Indiana. So what was the connection to Ball State? What was the motivation?
I actually was recruited to Ball State for baseball. So I was in high school. I was an All-State catcher, and I was applied to 3 schools and recruited by 3 schools. That's all I applied to. Actually, I applied to Michigan, too, but I knew I could never get in there. So that was just a rejection letter to put up on the board. But the other 3 schools was South Carolina, Kent State, and Ball State. And actually, I was committed to go play at South Carolina. And had a call with the coach. And, I got the secretary. I remember sitting in my office with the AD, got a secretary, and she was extremely rude to us. And right then and there, I decided, I've been on the East Coast, kind of dealt with rude people my whole life, and I wanted to go to a different part of the country and experience it. And so right then and there, I decided I was not going to South Carolina anymore. And so I ended up going out to Muncie with Coach Quinn.
So did you play your freshman year?
I did until my knees could no longer take staying in a crouch.
Got it. I didn't play college, but high school and grade school catcher, and yeah, my knees are jacked to this day. So as you were playing and getting accustomed to Ball State, there had to have been a first connector to you to the house, to SAE. Who was that? How did that happen?
I was in one of the dorms that athletes stayed in. I don't even know the name of it. It was across from the all-girls dorm down on the southern part of the campus. And actually my, what do they call them? The RAs, my RA was a SAE at the time. I don't think he lasted much longer after I was there, but he was an SAE, Mark Sharp.
And, I remember Sharp. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how many more years, but, he was the first person after I stopped playing, that said, you know, because honestly, as you said, I was from Connecticut. I did not know many people. And once I stopped playing, you know, all the guys that I knew were still playing. And so they were busy and I wasn't. And so I was like, well, you know, being at a campus of, what was it, like 21,000 at that time?
Yeah, around there.
And not knowing many people, I thought it was a way to maybe start meeting some people.
All right, so he brought you to a Rush event, or what was the first time on the at the house?
Yeah, it was actually, I don't even know if it was a Rush event, to be honest with you. I think it might have been a party, and I think I met a couple people there, and then a couple of the guys said that I should rush, and it went from there. I definitely had, I think, during that time, one of the smallest pledge classes.
Mm-hmm. And what was it?
I want to say we were Beta Mu.
So you're 94 fall?
94 fall, correct.
Yeah, that'd been Beta Mu.
Yeah, I think we had five or six people in it, and I think only two ended up really lasting, me and Kevin Clojay.
Right. All right, so did you? When did you live in the house?
Funny story, Sean. I think I was the only person never to live in the house.
What?
Yeah, don't know how I got away with that. I think... I think it was because I was there pretty much every day my sophomore year. I think everyone thought I lived in the house, and I didn't. So I lived near the house, but I was in an apartment about two streets away. And then my junior year, I lived with four brothers, Johnny Bell, Earl Wyatt, Kyle Cousin, and Mike Boudicker. And then senior year, Cooch, Miller, Boderger, and I lived on Light Street.
Right.
So I never lived in the house.
Funny, funny, funny. All right. So what's one of your, like, some of your first memories of parties, fun, whatever, funny things happening just, you know, in the house itself?
You know, there were a lot of good times in the house. You know, definitely, as I've heard people speak on some of these podcasts before, hanging out in the garage. You know, when I was there, the garage was Earl and Bell and Ryan Wolf and Slav, who, you know, everybody who knows Slav, you could just sit out there and just have a conversation with him for hours because he was just hilarious to talk to. Sometimes, most of the time, you never knew where it was going to go. But I just liked going around and meeting, you know, different people. I definitely remember one of my favorite times was with Ryan Johnson when we were watching the video. You might remember this when he got hypnotized.
Vaguely.
He got called up at Ball State and he was hypnotized, and they told him he was like an alien and that he could understand them, but he was speaking a different language.
Yeah, I remember this.
So I remember we were all in his room watching it, and we were just amazed, just saying to him, we're like, Johnson, you seriously had no idea that you were, what was going on? He's like, I don't remember any of this.
That's awesome. All right, so what about some funny party moments? Some crazy things happening with a lot of people milling around the house or whatever. What were some of those flashbacks?
Blackouts are more like it than flashbacks. I just remember them being so crowded, you know, and I know a lot of people talked about, you know, the Y store and Kingsley, the, you know, the DJ. I just remember, you know, going from some of them being in the basement when I think I first was there to, for some reason, I think we moved into the kitchen.
Yep.
And Honestly, I liked it in the kitchen better because, as most people know at that time, the next day after a party going downstairs in that basement,
oh, my God,
might have been the worst experiences of anyone's life with how bad it smelled and just sticking to the floor.
All right, what about some intramural sports stuff? Were you able to play or were your knees too jacked?
No, I was able to play. I just couldn't stay in a crouch. And, you know, from the time I was 5 years old, all I did was catch.
Right.
You know, when coaches would come up to me at tryouts, they'd be, what other position do you play? And I'd look at them and say, I only have a catcher's glove. So I was exclusively a catcher for my whole life. So once that ended, I really, you know, didn't have anywhere else to go. But I did play intramural sports. I played softball. Played flag football. I know I played other things, but I mean, there's some good stories there. I remember one time, you know, we had a very good volleyball team, you know, for SAE. I mean, with Boudicker, Corey, and Dave.
Yeah.
I mean, those three were incredible, and I think one time, I don't know if I just was at practice with them or something, but a guy on the other team, like, spiked one at my head, and I was like, I'm out of here. I was like, I was not good at volleyball. But one of my favorite stories definitely was in softball. We had a very good team, and I remember I was playing third base, and Earl was pitching, and a ball was hit to me, and I had a very good arm. From my catcher days, and I think there was men on first and second, and I stepped on third, and I threw over to first, and Earl was just watching, and it hit him in the side of the head, and the ball literally bounced in the air over the fence on the third base side.
So wait, you knocked Earl out, and everybody got home?
He actually took it very well. You know, he hit him in his head. He had a huge knot for a while.
Everybody scored though?
I think they just got a couple bases at the time. he didn't move out of the way or duck, and I got him right in the head.
Well, hopefully he rubbed some ice on it. What about road trips outside of school? What about getting down to vacations or just other universities, or any specific situations with that?
I took a couple of road trips. You know, I went on one spring break, I believe, with a group to Panama City, which was always an interesting experience. I remember heading down, we were down in Panama City, we were heading down to the bars from the place that we were staying. I think it was John Bell, Earl, myself, Cooch, possibly. Just to show you who I even remember was there. But I remember we went down to the bars, and then when they closed, we had no way of getting back, so we said, we'll just walk. And I think we got about half a mile before we realized we were never going to get there. And so we called and ordered a pizza and waited for the pizza delivery man to come out and then asked him where he was going. He told us the address. He said, yep, that's us. You can drop us off too. And he said he wasn't supposed to do that, but we were like, well, if you go and deliver that pizza, nobody's there. Or you could just drop us off and we'll give you like $20 on top of it, which he ended up doing.
So wait, were you at the pizza place and had him?
Yeah, we were waiting for him to come out. Somebody had the bright idea to do that.
That's
and that
hilarious.
Was good because it ended up being, I think we were like 6 miles from the house, so that walk would have taken us quite a while.
Did you eat the pizza in the car on the way?
Good question. I do not remember.
that's awesome. All right, so
I remember. I'll tell you how bad that day was. Is that when we got back to the place we were renting, We all kind of were getting a little tired, and some might have fallen asleep pretty quickly. And so I was trying to close up, and I kept closing the sliding glass door, and it wouldn't shut. And I kept closing it and closing it. And finally somebody said, "Brendan, Bell's head's in the way." So I was closing it on his head. And so he had a nice mark the next day, almost like Tommy Boy, where it wasn't right here, it was more here.
That's great. All right, so how would you say SE prepared you for the real world, and what are you doing now?
So I own my own company right now. When I got out of college, I kind of had some various jobs here or there. Ended up working in New York City for about 5 years in insurance, selling insurance, and got out of that because I just didn't like it. And I became a teacher for about 10-11 years in Connecticut, and I was coaching and doing other things, and kind of just got tired of some of the things going on in the teaching world and wanted to get out of it. And so I happened to fall into this industry of recruiting and helping families in the recruiting process with their kids. And so I worked for a national organization for about 5 years before moving on with some of my coworkers from there. And so now five of us own our own company where we help families in the recruiting process.
Recruiting what? Explain, like, what?
So sports. So if you have like an athlete and, you know, they're looking to play in college and they just don't know what to do or how to do it, or even if they kind of do have an idea, it's a process, and there's a lot that goes into it, and there's a lot of times where people don't know, you know, schools to contact where a potential fit could be, and so we're kind of like the middleman to help, and we use our relationships. You know, I've been lucky enough in this industry to build relationships, especially in the baseball world, all across the country. So I know a lot of coaches, and, you know, when they're looking for players or looking for things, I can steer them in the right direction or give them some insight on some kids.
So is this high school to college or college to pro or both?
We specifically do high school to college, and that's it. Although, you know, we have had kids go directly from high school to pro.
Wow.
On the baseball side, we just had one of our kids just picked in the first round, 20th pick last year. And I currently work with a family of an athlete who, right now, he's projected to be the number one pick in the 2023 class. He's a left-handed pitcher right now as a sophomore in high school.
So how do you determine how do they find you, or how do you find them?
It's a matter of both. You know, sometimes I'll have some high school or travel coaches call me and tell me that they have a kid that I should come and look at. Sometimes I'm at a game and I see a kid who I really like what I see, and I'll just approach them and their family and talk to them. But it's a lot of word of mouth, you know, from families that we've helped in the process before, when families have come up to them and said, you know, what did you do in this process? And they'll give our information out. And then building a lot of relationships with the travel programs. You know, there's certain travel programs that I work very closely with who, majority of their athletes, they tell, you know, them to give me a call.
So as far as that, you went through a lot of different things with your career, but this sounds like it's a perfect fit. If you were looking back to Ball State and SAE, in what positions, this is like two-part, what positions did you hold in the house, if any, as far as roles, and then how do you think the house really prepared you for the real world?
Well, again, I was fortunate enough not to hold any positions in the house. I did live with the president, so I felt that that was pretty close to actually holding position. You know, he would inform me after meetings of what happened, since I very rarely was able to attend because of academics, let's say. And I did not hold any positions. But as far as preparing for the real world, you know, it definitely prepared you to be able to communicate with people that maybe you didn't have things in common with,
right,
or wouldn't see yourself, you know, hanging out with. You know, again, you probably know better than me, but I would say what we had, like 75, 80 guys, maybe 125, I don't even know, at the time when we were going through. And obviously you're not getting along with all of them. You know, I mean, you didn't hate people's guts for the most part. I mean, there were a couple guys that I kind of disliked, but you just kind of avoid them. But there were times where you had to be able to still communicate with them. So, you know, as far as that, dealing with different personalities and being able to still communicate to be able to solve an issue or, you know, to progress in something that you needed to do. And also to learn, you know, that you could end up being, you know, friends with some people in the house who maybe were completely different than you, that didn't have the same interests, but, you know, you got along very well. So it prepared you in the sense of, as I said, you know, dealing with so many different personalities, and being able to communicate and use your communication skills.
Right. Well, is there anything else you just kind of like to add about overall SAE, the experience, doing your, you know, kind of telling your point of view? Just what would you like to say, like, to the younger guys maybe that might be listening to this, or any of the other guys you think that should also tell their stuff?
You know, I've heard some people say it on some of the podcasts before, but it is true. You know, these are friends that you have for the rest of your lives. You know, there was a time when I hadn't seen a lot of people from Ball State being on the East Coast still. And, you know, not many people obviously are around here. Most everyone still lives in the Midwest. And a couple of years ago, you know, Mike, Corey, Kyle, and I got together for a weekend. And Mike invited probably like 15, 20 other SAE guys in the area over one night. And it was just great seeing everyone and being able to catch up. And almost like you know, didn't miss a beat whatsoever after 15, 20 years. I mean, we'll be coming upon our 25th reunion soon.
Right.
Between, what, 97?
Yeah.
So we're coming up there in 25 years, and, you know, some of these guys, you know, I hadn't seen in 20 years.
Right.
And, you know, still being able to just pick right up where you left. Obviously, you know, there's a few that I talk to on, you know, a yearly, monthly basis. But, you know, as somebody else said, I think it was Mike Boedeker and his, that, you know, he doesn't speak to many of his high school friends anymore. And you know, I speak to a few, but definitely have kept in touch with my college buddies much more.
Right.
So bonds that, you know, you have created over the years through the SAE and college have just continued to carry on, and, you know, they will continue to carry on. And funny enough, I was actually driving the other day here in Kennebunkport, and I saw a kid riding a bike down and had an SAE sweatshirt on.
Did you tackle him and tree him?
I did swerve at him a little bit and make sure, you know, and, no. Yeah, yelp, phi, alpha.
Give me the alphabet.
Exactly. So, no, I just was like, wow, you know, I haven't seen those letters. I was just thinking about that. You know, every time we had a party or Patty Murphy or something like that, we all got shirts, or you bought shirts, I think. And I have nothing. So anybody that, you know, has kept all their shirts over the years, I think Johnny Bell probably has like 7,000 shirts still, and probably two fit him, but I'm sure he probably still wears every single one.
Right.
Knowing Johnny.
Well, right on, man. We're going to wrap this up. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we cut out?
No, just appreciate you doing this and, you know, being able to reconnect some people or some names that maybe we've, you know, forgotten about. It was great going back and listening to some people speak and speaking about some things that I had completely forgotten about, and, you know, being able to reminisce a little bit. So I appreciate what you're doing.
Well, thank you. All right, so stay on the line, Phi Alpha, and I'm going to close this one out.